Echo's Box podcast is not meant to be or claiming to be a good place for therapeutic advice. The host is not a licensed therapist and is not offering any services or advice related to mental health in a professional manner. The content discussed on Echo's Box is commonly highly explicit due to the real nature of expressing honest emotions. While we don't mean to offend anyone, the reality is these discussions might be triggering to many people. Out of respect for all, please do not listen if this content isn't right for you, and forgive us if you have a poor experience. Keep your brain healthy.
It means the way this current of energy has passed from one person to another is through the voice. You know, our voice is sound waves.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back to Echo's Box. This is episode 32, I'm calling it Stage Fright. At least I think it's episode 32. Yeah, that should be right. If I said it and it was recorded, that's right. Before we dive in, though, of course, you were just listening to a new song off of my upcoming album. I like linking them here because very niche audience. If you know me, then you already know about my music. So give you a little bit more taste than what I post on my actual public social medias. Not to say this is not a public social media, but anyway, that song is called ATD. It stands for Analogous to Death, and it's got some fun little Midnight Gospel references from some Damien Echols and Duncan Trussell quotes in that song, both in the drop and towards the end, as you'll get another peek of, as long as you stay till the end of the episode, or, you know, skip ahead. And just one more friendly reminder, because I forget to do this almost every single episode, go to echoesbox.com. You know, obviously this is the podcast website, but if you go there, you can check out all the cool things we have, from references to social media for music stuff for Jones, my bands Lost in the Mons and Opt Out, and you can also find my book Fundamental Magic. You'll be able to find my other book that's coming soon once it's out there as well. And yeah, any contact questions or anything that you want to engage with us on, you can of course leave comments on any of the platforms and reviews on the platform. That's great. But if you want to just reach out directly, we do still have a contact page up. So I'm terrible at plugging that, but echoesbox.com. If you're listening to the podcast, you should kind of already know what that is, unless you just happened upon us in like a weird feed. All right, enough rambling. We're going to stop rambling about that and ramble about something else. So today's episode's called Stage Fright, but we're not really going to be talking about stage fright. I just thought it would be kind of like a catchy title. In fact, I don't really get stage fright anymore now that I think about it. I get nerves, you know, like if you've ever, whenever you have like something that important that you have to do that stresses you out, like maybe a work project, it's not something that like you're afraid to do. Like you would freeze if you got up there. It's like, oh man, it's like work. I have to get this thing done. So I'll get nervous about not doing well or something like that, but I'm not scared to perform, right? I'm not scared to get on the stage and act a fool and dance around. That doesn't bother me. The difference is being in performance mode. When I was in high school and younger, I definitely was very scared to get on stage in front of people, but I kind of grew out of that as I performed more and more through like marching band and other stuff, which that's probably the only positive skill in high school that, as far as music goes, was marching band. I didn't like marching band very much. Symphonic band was cool though. Yeah, so we are pretty much just rambling day. It's probably going to be a shorter episode, but we're going to ramble about music stuff. So if you're interested in kind of some notes about how the quote-unquote music industry works, at least when it comes to being an independent artist, that's kind of what this episode is going to be all about, because I've had a busy week with music. This past weekend, I think it was this past weekend, I'm losing track of time now, I've been on kind of like a party bender all week, as you'll learn. But I played Purgatory at the Masquerade, which is a venue in Atlanta, and it's a stage. Purgatory is one of their three stages, well, now four stages. They have Purgatory, Heaven, Hell, and the Altar now. And Purgatory is a stage that I've seen bands like Knuckle Puck play. I've seen 2022. I saw them again there this week. I've seen, oh my God, just so many. A Dangerous Summer. I've seen most of the shows that I've been to at the Masquerade. If it wasn't like a major band, like when I saw Era, they were in Heaven, and that was the bigger stage in this venue. Anyways, check that out if you're interested in this, the Masquerade. But my point is, I've always wanted to play that stage, and I finally got to, and it was so cool, because I've even been hanging out like in the green room doing like VIP stuff with Tony and some other friends and artists that were playing shows. So like, if I had the experience, I have friends that work there and they showed me all the cool things, which is awesome. But getting to actually play the show is a whole different experience. And it feels like a big milestone, a big achievement. And it was literally like, I played that stage. I did the whole, we partied in the green room. We sounded awesome. We crushed it. There should be a video out for it now. If you go check out the Lost and LeBron's YouTube channel, I think we have a music video and a live video for it out at the same time as this podcast episode, if not very, very soon. So keep an eye on that and subscribe if it's not posted yet. Otherwise, it should be there. But it was awesome. We sounded great. We killed it. Made a bunch of new friends. And I feel like it'll be easier to go back and play shows like that now that we know how to do it, now that we have the right contacts, now that we've had the experience. And not only do we have the information, but it went really well for us. And so we're just stoked on that. I can't speak for everybody. I'm sure they feel the same. My other band members feel the same. But I personally am stoked on that because literally within the same week, I went to Tony 22 show and he played the same stage as me. I thought he was playing in hell for some reason, but he played the same stage he did when he first came to the Masquerade and fucking killed it. And that was an awesome show. And it was just cool because like not just days prior, I was doing all the stuff that him and his crew were having to do behind the scenes. And so it was cool to just kind of watch as a fan and see how he's interacting. Cause like I always like to see how other artists in the industry that are not like, obviously, like if I were to go to a festival, like or see Bring Me the Horizon or like an Ariana Grande, kind of all these big major label artists, completely different. But somebody like Tony 22, he's viral in popularity as far as the internet goes. But I mean, he's not selling out stadiums. Like that's no diss on him. He's the coolest dude in the world. I think he's awesome. I would love to go see him play a fucking stadium. But that's just not where he's at in his career. And he's still playing the same venues that I have opportunities to play. It's a lot harder for me to because I don't have nearly the same pool that he does. But that's kind of what I wanted to kind of talk more about today is kind of what I've learned throughout my hobby career as a musician, playing shows and writing music, and kind of where we're going from there. So up to this point, it's been a lot of just the biggest things that I've learned have been to deal with booking shows and networking, right? Because I remember being 15 years old when I started playing shows in high school. And even though I was in a Christian rock band and we were allowed to play like at churches so we could get some like worship gigs and stuff, that's usually what those were. Like if we played a youth group, they would usually let us play some of our own original stuff, but like a song or two, which we didn't have very many to begin with. But we'd do that and then we'd have to like lead worship for the center. So we weren't really just playing a show. We were providing community service for those particular worship gigs. And that's fine. At the time, that's kind of the thing we were into. And that's kind of how we got our start. And no shame in that. But we didn't understand how people were playing shows at even our most run-down local venue in high school. We kept asking, how do we get booked? How do we get booked? So, oh, you talk to this guy, talk to this guy. And what it boiled down to was that we didn't understand networking, but on top of that, we were also nervous like to actually go play a show because we wanted to play these other stages, but we've only been playing fucking worship music and we have like a couple of original songs and then we've got a couple covers to learn and we don't have gear like that. We have gear to play churches. Our amps don't get loud enough for a rock and roll venue. They're barely loud enough for like our practice space. As I learned later in life, if you would just mic things up correctly and have good sound engineering skills, all of our gear would have been fine. But that's the kind of stuff we didn't know. We were some teenagers with some guitars and some amps and a drum set. Like we didn't know how the audio engineering side of that stuff worked. We didn't understand how to even just sound decent at all. We just knew how to write music and play together. And that's, you know, that's true, like almost punk rock, right? But as we got older, you know, we got better at the music thing, got better at the, we started to understand our gear. We started to invest in the half stacks and all that kind of stuff. And cause that's what was cool at the time. And we started playing shows because the networking thing wasn't hard. Your local venue, you go talk to the manager. That's what you do. You know, if it's not a major venue, if it's like your rundown local shop that all the high school kids and the college kids are playing at, right? This is the place where local bands play. If you've got a couple spots like that in your area that are small and don't have like a lot of big touring acts coming through, there is no like promotional team. I'm going to tell you right now, there's a dude, maybe a couple dudes, maybe they're like booking for a like if they're like a restaurant with a bar and a stage kind of thing, maybe they're booking for the restaurant. Front desk people do that. Whatever it is, they've got one person, maybe two people allocated, is my point, to booking bands. And so if you find out who those one or two people are and just say, hey, this is me, I want to play a show, that usually they're going to say yeah. Like, as long as you don't suck, you'll bring some kind of crowd and you fit the vibe. Like, for example, it's kind of hard for a heavy metal band to play a country bar. It doesn't quite fit the vibe. But if they wanted to have like a special heavy metal night, maybe the bar's doing that, and since they know who you are, they'll bring your band in, and you can kind of do that kind of stuff. So it's all about networking. Like I said, even if you were to play somewhere that doesn't have your particular genre of music that you guys perform, maybe they can make an exception. Like, if they have a nice stage or something, it doesn't matter what the setting of the venue is, if they are supporting that endeavor, if that is their goal. And you only do that by making friends and networking. So maybe it's just not a good fit and it doesn't work out. But then, like I'm saying, the small local venues, they need bands to play. None of us are famous. We're all local musicians. We all know each other. We all see each other at shows or wherever we go to play. So it's like, nobody's standing on a pedestal. Nobody's better than anybody else. It's who's playing that week, who's already booked, and you gotta put yourself out there to say, hey, I want to get booked at that venue. And that's what we learned in high school. And then we were able to play more shows. Then we learned how kind of some local festival stuff works. We used to play this festival called Summer Side Show. We played it 1 year. I think we only played it the 1 year, but I had friends who had played it pretty much every year it was around. And that was a big deal. And getting booked on that was a little different process. You did like this pre-sale thing, or if you had like a good deal or paid for a slot, you could probably do that too. But for the most part, especially with the owner of that venue at the time, who ran that festival, he was like really big on obviously supporting the younger generation coming up. Like, I was playing it in while I was in high school is when I started, and he was running all this and trying to let the younger kids have the space. But he also still needs money to run the thing, so he obviously can't just charge 16-17-year-old kids hundreds and hundreds of dollars that we don't have. You know, most of them just graduating high school or still in high school or in early college and have even less money. So we got to do like the pre-sale model. So we help him sell tickets for the show. He gives us a slot, and based on how many you sell, you know, cool. I ended up opening for like a plea for purging with my shitty little Christian rock band. Super fucking sick show. One of the coolest shows I've ever played in my life. Probably sound like ass. I don't care. Super cool. And then kind of just from there, we all matured, got older. We played music less and less. Some spinoff bands happened. I played a couple other cool venues, like the Seven venue, which is no longer a thing. That one was kind of like a more middle tier venue, where it was kind of same deal. How do you get booked at that? Well, for there, you can kind of just call up and say, hey, I want to talk to who does booking, and get coordinate from there. Or you can talk to local promoters that are having small like pop punk acts or punk acts or whatever, or metal acts that are coming through already. And you can talk to them and say, hey, I know you're coming through to the Seven venue. Do you guys need local support? And maybe they'll charge you for a slot. Maybe they'll even pay you if you've got a pool as local support. Maybe they'll give you a cut of ticket sales. You never know. It just kind of depends. But that's, you have to find those people. So it's a lot of just networking and Googling. And back then it was harder than it is now, because internet resources were less and less. Now it's super easy. So long story short, flash forward to kind of the show that we've played recently. I guess flash forward a little bit before that. We've been putting on bigger shows than what we, our local community and venues currently support. The city that we're all from doesn't really have like a major big venue for just generic any music. Like, we have a giant stadium center. It's not like a football stadium or anything like that, but it's called a civic center, so it's meant for hosting big touring acts and stuff. So it's like thousands of people, I think. I don't really know exactly how much that holds, but that's great. That's like when Nickelback comes and fucking tears it up through town. We're all going, getting drunk and partying and watching some goddamn Nickelback. We have a stage for that in my city. that's too big for my pop punk band with 900 followers, or my little pop project with a couple hundred followers, or whatever to play. Nobody's showing up in that one. There's no ticket sales. You can rent out other venues, but like some of these venues that you can rent out, while they're relatively affordable, are sitting room only, because they're meant to be theaters. They may have a great sound system. They may have a great stage. They may be able to do an event and be affordable, but they're not made for rock and roll or even hip hop and rap. It's just not. Just because you can, it's not going to work out well. So all we have is what we have, which are these little local shops that allow bands to come and play music, and they run these little events. And then we have bars, and bar stages are something that just came new to us, right? So we started it off by putting on our own show at a venue called The Loft, and we do that every year, and it's gone really well every single time. It's kind of like our kind of hometown hero show, so to speak. And so we kind of get other locals that are upcoming to hop on and support, and we all play together, and everybody makes a little bit of money, and we all go home having played a cool show. And then, at least for my band, we throw the money back into our gear, so we actually don't make any of it. But it's fun. It's a great fucking time. And we kind of transitioned from that to realizing, hey, maybe we could play bar shows. Maybe that's not so bad. And some of our friends in this, that we just recently actually met in person, but just based on how they're treating us, I call them friend. There's this pop punk band in Atlanta called Over Anna, and they just happened to like us and know who we are. I don't know how they ever heard of us, but they did, and they recommended us to a couple different promoters around the Atlanta area for pop punk shows. And we ended up getting booked at a bar called The Hummingbird, and we're going to go play back there again in May if you want to come check us out. Date's not posted yet, but follow Lost on Lemons. I think Lost on Lemons official on Instagram or whatever else, and you'll know when it's posted, right? I know how that's annoying, but that's how it works, man. You gotta follow us so we can tell you things. I wish I could just like buzz everybody on the planet that cares whenever something's going on, but that's how that works. Anyway, I'm rolling off five different tangents. I am exhausted, by the way, if you can't tell. And it's because of all the stuff that's going on. So kind of keeping with that theme, like I said, we'll be coming back to the Hummingbird later. But the Hummingbird's a bar. So while it's a very grungy bar that fits playing any kind of music, it's still a bar. And they're paying us to be a bar band. So most time, some bar bands come prepared to like take requests and stuff. We don't. We play a set. Like, we're coming to their acts play show, and we still play originals and stuff, but we're even playing like good old butt rock dad rock song, playing some Nickelback, playing some other fun stuff. We're playing some pop punk classics too, like Yellow Card and shit like that. But we're playing for several hours straight, not just a quick 30-minute set, not even an hour set as like a headliner. Even though I guess in this case we were the headliner, and I think we are in this case too, but we're just playing a bar set. So we're there, we're having a blast, but it's not the same thing as putting on a show on a bigger stage at a bigger venue. But those kind of shows are the most lucrative. If you're able to play bars, you'll get paid more consistently. And the less of you there are, and the less complicated or amount of driving you have to do, you actually may be able to make enough to contribute something. For us, it's just enough to justify being able to get to travel around and play shows. Like, we could use that to buy our hotel room or whatever else. But it just depends on how much they pay and how long we're playing for. So we've gotten that, and we learned how to talk to those people, and now it's even easier for us to book shows elsewhere. And then as far as getting booked at like a major venue like the Masquerade, they have public booking contacts, and they do reply. You just have to give them time, and if you haven't heard anything after a certain amount of time passes, you follow up. You know, don't badger them. But once you get a show booked, you get promoter contacts. You get to all the people that you need to talk to, your hospitality managers, your technical managers. You get the technical rundowns and tech specs, because you have to play there. You are now working with them, and once you've done it once and prove that you can do it, as long as you didn't suck or cause a problem, then now you know how it works, and you have better contacts that you've met there in person, or that you have at least contact information for that you're authorized to have, to follow up and be like, hey, you know, remember we played this show, this is how it went, you know, put us on another one. So we, at the start of last year, I tried to get us booked. We didn't hear a whole lot back. I followed up. They got back to us. They're like, hey, we've got this one if you can do it, we'll pitch you. And that's all they can do, right? Unless you're going to put on a show, like actually book a show as a major act that's going to sell tickets, which is not where I'm at. Like that's the hugest difference between me and somebody like these TikTok famous people, like the Home Team or Arrows in Action or Tony, even Tony 22. Like they are so big that they're able to put on their own shows. They're able to call venues up and be like, hey, I am so and so, this is my, you know, prestige where I'm at, and I know I can sell tickets. And so the venue has confidence that they're gonna sell some tickets, and it's easier for them to get put on. Whereas a local supporting act, this is the size of something like the projects that I'm in currently, we've got to get pitched. So like if Tony's coming through town and his promoter wants local supporting acts, I can ask the Masquerade, or I can even ask his promoter, kind of the same thing I talked about earlier. It's the exact same way. You see, it just scales a little bit differently, just like how we started by asking our local venues owners how to do it. It's the same way here. Now that I'm a local act, I would reach out to the Masquerade, or I'd reach out to the promoter, or whatever venue we're playing at, or whoever the best point of contact is, or both, and be like, hey, you know, I want to play the show, or I'm available for these dates, even if you can't get on that show. And they'll be like, okay, cool, we'll pitch you to the promoter, the touring band's promoter. And if they basically put you in with whoever else is getting pitched, and the artist will pick who they like the best, or based on their music, if they think it fits well, or based on their follower count, it could be a number of factors. And then if you get picked, you get booked, and otherwise you don't. So we had an opportunity like that presented to us. We could play it from our end, so we told them to go and pitch us. Unfortunately, the touring band wanted more like an indie rock thing, less of a pop punk thing, so they went with somebody else. But there was a bigger tour coming later, so they said, hey, we're gonna keep you guys on the roster for playing this date if you guys think you'll be available. We told them, go ahead, get back to us if they basically make the slot. But in between then, over Anna recommended us to this touring package, and their promoter got in contact with us and asked us if we could play. So now that we've played and we have all that other contact, it's not that it's easier. I can't just snap my fingers now as Jones, or even though it's easier for me, probably less so as Jones, because I haven't done anything with it. I just think in terms of it as me managing myself is a little bit easier than coordinating with the four other people that are in either of these bands. But if we wanted to come back as Lost in Le Mans, I'd feel that it would be pretty simple, but we don't have any like actual control. We can just ask, right? And that's kind of how it goes. Until you build up to a point where you are able to sell your own tickets, you really only have two options. Once you get to the size of artists that we are, even as our, like, we're just like hobbyists, like we're not doing this for fame, fortune, this is not our day job. I think it would be cool if we could get big enough to book those bigger venues and sell tickets on our own. But realistically, where we're at right now is we can either throw our own show by booking the venue, like we put down our own money, and then ticket sales really are on us, so we can recoup our costs because we're investing in it. But then the venue doesn't lose anything. So that's one play. You know, I think it's an Eric DOA quote. One of the songs is funny how when you're making money, it's easier to make friends. I think that's the lyric. But if you've got, it's money helps. If you've got a little bit of cash that you can use to put on a show, you can rent a space, you can rent a venue space, if you wanted to, and sell tickets yourself, then you can play shows. Otherwise, you just kind of have to ask to play shows. So doing all of that and getting to this point and actually playing the show and learning all this stuff is just like, yeah, it's just the same thing at a bigger picture. It, just like when we were in high school and we were nervous to ask about who to book shows with, and we didn't know what we were doing. It's the same thing here. You just had to keep asking. Every time it's just ask, talk to people, network. And that's been true like career and a lot of other stuff in my life too. It's just talk to people, be genuine, you know, ask about what you need. Say, hey man, I'm interested in doing this. And if somebody is willing to help you, they'll give you information. If not, they'll tell you no. And if they're just mean to you, then no, well, they weren't going to help you anyway, right? So it's worth asking. You know, don't be annoying. Don't badger people. Like, for example, just because I have contacts for this venue, I'm not going to be spamming the shit out of their email or their phones. That would be terrible etiquette, and then I wouldn't get to play there, right? So be professional. Like that, if you want the more professional level gigs, you have to be prepared to be a professional musician, at least in work ethic. You know, obviously this is not my day job and I am not an expert, but I mean, my old music teacher always said, you're not a professional till you get paid for it. And, I've been paid for it. So I guess I'm a professional now. No, all of that money again, right back into the band. So, no profit, but I have been paid. Yeah, so that's a whirlwind. And then Thursday, I went to Tony's show, and that was kind of cool because, like I said, going back to the start of this, I watched, you know, the last couple shows I've been to. The very first time I saw him, he's first tour ever, right? He'd never been on tour, never been to Atlanta. He's reaching out to anybody that he followed in the Atlanta sphere, one to, you know, market to us and make sure we're coming as fans, but also, like, be excited to meet some of us for the first time. Like, Tony had been following me for, like, the last, I think, year since he saw me do, like, a cover and showed me some support. And, you know, I thought of it as, like, just a genuine, like, hey, I appreciate you doing the cool thing, like, this cover, and I think you're cool. You know, I don't think he's, like, listening to my music or, like, actually following my page. But to my surprise, no, he did. He had kind of kept up with the meta of what was going on with my music and stuff, and just was super supportive, had kind words to say, and had genuine conversation. And from that, because that was his first tour, you know, he's meeting everybody else too. I can't just hog him the whole time, right? This is the first time he's met me. He may know who I am, but I'm not famous, and I'm still a stranger on the fucking internet. And then he interacts with all these other fans, and it's a great time. But then I kind of stay after, and we do this after party thing, and I think I ended up driving his parents to the bar we went to. But I hung out with him and Sage, and we all just were able to escape the trap that is having to be a professional on tour or at a show. Because I haven't even been on tour. But when I'm at a show, you know, I don't just let anybody back in the green room. I don't just let anybody kind of hog my attention for any given amount of time. Not because I'm super popular or something, but I have a lot of friends that are coming to this stuff, and we're working, we're putting on events, we need a space to relax. So the fact that Tony had even had VIP in the green room was like wild to me, because like I won't talk, like, I don't bring my friends back to the green room, I do, but it, like, for example, when we played the Masquerade, we explicitly couldn't, because you can only have a limit. Like, if we're throwing a show, it's a little bit different, but the point is, we like to have our separation piece. I come out and I still talk to everybody. I still socialize. I'm not like snooty and hiding around, but I do need a hidey hole so that way we can talk about things. If something goes wrong, we can coordinate. Like, while the event's going on, we're actively working. And a lot of people don't realize that just because the artist is out there seemingly have some kind of free time, they're working. They're actively working. Even if it's just me and I'm in my rinky dink town and the show is me and the other bands, I'm even like, unless the other bands are helping me or we're trying to coordinate with something, I'm not even talking to the other bands sometimes while I'm doing something at the show. Otherwise, the only people I really do talk to are the other bands while we're kind of behind the scenes. But yeah, it's like all my, like, even my girlfriend, like, if she's not in the green room with us, if she like has to show up late or something, she knows I'm going to be bouncing around, and like, I will come and prioritize her, 'cause, you know, that's my person. But, otherwise I'm working. She knows that I'm working. So she's not expecting to have full conversations on with me like she normally gets to when we're at home, because I'm having to diddle daddle around. So it doesn't even matter. It doesn't matter if you're your small town musician playing your local coffee shop, or if you're playing a big festival, that is still true. It's nice to have a hidey hole. It's nice to separate, you know, the working stuff. So it's cool, because the next year when Tony played Atlanta, he played a different spot. I think it's owned by the same people that own the Masquerade still, but he did a more legitimate, like, VIP experience. Not that the other one wasn't legitimate, the other one was like too legit, but it was cool, because I, at the first one, I actually made friends with them. You know, like, we're not super close by any fucking stretch, but yeah, I don't want any of you thinking that you can just convene, you can talk to these people. We give each other our mutual respect as artists. I know they are bigger than me and are busier than me, so they ignore me when I ask for stupid shit, and And we just like share and repost each other's stuff from time to time, and always let each other know when the after parties are if we're in the same city or something like that. So, yeah, it's cool to have that level of friendship, even though it's not super close. But when I'm at these shows, I'm a fan because I know they're working. So the fact that the first show was like that was cool because it let the opportunity lent itself to grow a more genuine relationship outside of the fan connection that's different. But it's important to know when you go to a show, even if it's your friend's show, you need to be coming there as a fan. You need to be coming there as a proud fan. You got to respect what they're doing and going on. So it was cool to see his maturity in that, and how a sage would always come back and be like, you know, we can't do this because our manager is going to get on to us. He's trying to keep us in line so we don't do these kind of things. And it's basically they're maturing. That you knew. He's like, fucking, I know like this shit I want to do is fun. It's cool. But it's not healthy overall to sustain, especially on this long tour, especially in terms of like worrying about parasocial relationships or giving people special attention and privilege. Like you want to be professional. And the motherfucker, like they were getting it. They're working with the right people and getting the right headspace. And then the show was even better, even more mature. You had his crew, and they had like a little fun, wholesome activity that was like super fucking dope. And you know, a lot of me and another friend of mine that I'll hopefully be working on some music with pretty soon here are kind of like, it's interesting to talk about the face of social media versus the actual people. So like, I know these particular dudes that I've kind of mentioned as examples just because this is my experience. I have some other experiences, but this is what has happened this week, and I don't want to just sit here and kind of go through even longer history. I thought this was going to be a short episode, but so far I'm cranking it out and still going. I forgot what was the point of me saying all that. Oh yeah, so I'm just using this as an example, right? So like I've got other cool, like when I went to ERA and met those guys. I don't know those guys though the same way I know Tony and Sage. And so like seeing that maturity of, hey, we have like an actual thing, we've got to cater to this. I was talking to my other friend and he was like, hey, have you ever ask them about this, that, or the other, or what about this TikTok that they posted and what that meant? And I would be like, yeah, man, that's all just like marketing shit. Like I do the same thing that they're doing. I'm paying attention to how they're doing it. I'm paying attention to the difference between like, and it's hard. It's hard sometimes, and I'll tell you why. But between a genuine post, like a personal post on social media versus content that is promotional. And most of what we are seeing on any of our artist profiles is content that is promotional. My private social media is my private social media. I don't post anything other than content that is marketing on my public social media, with exceptions, because this is why it's sticky. I still want to be genuine. My content, for the most part, is still genuine. Sometimes it's stealing sketches, or it's doing something goofy to try to hop on a trend. That is like pure marketing. That's more obvious. But like if I post something sentimental or a cool lyric video or a music video, or if I post a video talking about the song, that is all marketing. And I may say some shit that is like intentionally for marketing the music. But it will be genuine, because it's not, that's the thing about music, is you can manufacture music and not be passionate about it. But it's very difficult if you are trying to build a brand to just make everything up, because you have to not trip up, or you basically have to become the thing anyway. So it's easier if you already have something that you enjoy genuinely that you are growing, because just being a total fake artist, while it's possible, is way more work, because you have to basically become something you're not. And to each their own. Like that's, you just still want to do that for your career and that it's fun for you and you're doing a good job. Like, just know I'm acknowledging the burden that you have of, fuck, well, you got to keep up the act now, and that's tough. At some point, it'll end, because either that becomes, well, or it may not, either that becomes you and it's not an act anymore and it is genuine, or it does end one day and you go back to being your truest self. But maybe part of your journey was whatever you were doing with music. I don't know how that works. I'm kind of rambling about ideas. But my point is that it's difficult to not be genuine, but all of it's marketing. Everything on social media is pretty much marketing. Take everything with a grain of salt, but just enjoy what the message is of the artist that you like, because ideally you're following the artist and you like the music, right? So, yeah. Just knowing all that and talking to people, you know, I can see the light leave some people people's eyes, and it's like, oh, these people aren't like this in real life. It's like, hey, no, they are. That what you saw on the internet was still real, but it wasn't them. Like, that's just what they have chosen to present to you, and you may have heard that a billion times, perusing the internet. If not, you should have. So just keep that in mind. Like, these are real people with different, like, the conversations that I've had with Tony one-on-one versus the conversations that we have as a fan. Like, even my fan interaction with him, like, when I show up and I am a fan and it's fan mode and I'm waiting in line with the other fans, take a picture, you know, give him a hug, say what's up, I step aside. I don't have any questions for this guy. I talk to him randomly throughout the year. If I do have a question, I'm not afraid to ask it in the context of being a fan in the VIP setting. Otherwise, if there's something I want to talk about, like, that is personal, or maybe it's music related or business, that is like a longer conversation, I'll either just like ask him later when he's not on tour and not fucking busy, or I will wait till I get invited to an after party or whatever, or if I'm allowed to, once I am allowed to cross the barrier by the artist to say, hey, you no longer are just fan or VIP today, you're now allowed back into this space or this space. That is the key determinator that, okay, I can now engage more on an interpersonal level. And that's just true in general. You know, it's the same thing I was describing earlier. It's like, even if my friends are there, once I allow them to cross the threshold into the private area, that's where I'm like, hey, I'm trying to hang out with my homie real quick, right? Yeah, just the growth and maturity. Like, all of that is what I've been witnessing in these other artists that I look up to, and then seeing in myself. And so right now, how this all feels is actually quite the opposite of stage fright. It feels like the time to kind of like step stuff up. And I'm, after networking this whole weekend, helping my buddy Logan, he just played a really cool show last night, talking to all of them about music and just connecting with all these people. Like, I've been just doing music specifically in the Atlanta music scene this week on a bender, and it has been partying too, so it's like I'm tired, but it's been so beautiful and so worth it, to just get some more confidence and inspiration to witness the things that I've always wanted to achieve happen, and to be able to repeat them is kind of where we're at next. So yeah, new music's coming. Content on all the social media platforms is going to start getting cranked out, and it's going to be effortlessly more annoying, I hope, but in a good way. it's going to be more annoying for me to post. I don't really want to post as often as I feel like I'm inspired to, but I am inspired to do it. So I'm stoked. That's the point. I've got a lot of cool stuff to show to the world that's going to get shown. And it's not just through me. It's all of my musical projects. So again, if you're not already, it's Jones Music on TikTok and Instagram. You can find all of my links there to our Spotify or my Spotify and Apple Music and all that kind of stuff, and our merch and music videos and stuff like that. And that's for the pop project that you've been hearing on the recent intros and outros and many episodes before as well. Lost on Le Mans Official on Instagram, and I believe just Lost on Le Mans on TikTok, and Lost on Le Mans on all your streaming services and YouTube videos. That's LOSTONLEMANS, Le Mans. I always have to spell it. I always say it's lemons, but with an A. Oh man, I'm so tired. But I cannot leave without mentioning the last one, Opt Out Georgia, or Opt Out GA on Instagram, and just Opt Out if you search it. Well, it's kind of hard to search for just Opt Out, but Opt Out. Look up Wicked Queens. That's a great fucking song. Yeah, we're cranking out music. We're fucking playing shows. So come out and see us this year. We just started. I'm a peace out now, though. I'm tired of shit. I'll catch you on the next episode. Thanks for listening to me ramble. I hope it was at least somewhat enjoyable. If not, then leave a bad review on this episode. Peace.
That have the energy, or is it the energy coming out of the person saying the words?
Combination of both.